It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
Welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitudes, and techniques using the proven and highly successful Sandler training system. This week my guest is Tracy Bullock. Tracy is in the Phoenix, Arizona market. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Tracy and I were talking about what should we cover today, and we thought, okay, what would be the most difficult Sandler concept to try to convey over the radio? And we came up with the thought of negative reverse selling. So it is the strategy where you position the buyer to argue on your behalf. We call it the truth serum in sales. It helps buyers get clear on whether they really need what you have to offer, and it helps you as a salesperson to get clarity about whether following up is in your best interest or not. So, Tracy, unpack for our listeners how you would define negative reverse selling.
Well, I think I loved the phrase you just used. In fact, I wrote it down, truth serum. You know, the Sandler rule that says buyers don't buy for your reasons, they buy for their own.
Yes.
Or I say they buy in spite of you or not because of you.
Right.
Sometimes we don't get out of our own way, and sometimes we don't understand, you know, that they're buying for their own reasons, and we have to help them discover it for themselves. And I think that has been, I always bought into it. I always understood it, Jim. And yet the technique itself, you know, first of all, it takes some nerve to say, yeah, it's probably not right for you.
Right.
And secondly, I mean, it almost takes as much guts as doing an upfront contract the first time you say, tell me no.
Right.
Because you're actually in the middle of the selling process, typically down the path away in the qualification process. And it's funny because we teach negative reverse selling early on in the foundational or fast start segments, and yet that questioning strategy and the comfort level that you need to use it, I think, comes much later.
It does. And this whole concept of negative reverse selling can be confusing because it sounds like it should be negative. And it really, we use that term negative to define the opposite of what the buyer may expect. So Tracy mentioned that in the upfront contract, it's a challenge to get the client to say no. And that really is a sample of negative reverse selling. So Tracy, share with us, how does that sound like in an upfront contract?
In an upfront contract, it would typically be, you know, I'll do a quick A-not. I appreciate the time today. Obviously, I have some questions for you because I don't pretend to know your business or the things that you might want to talk about. And naturally, you'll have some questions for me. But at the end of our time together, what I'd like to make sure you're comfortable doing is telling me no if this doesn't work, and raise your hand at any time during our conversation, because that's an acceptable answer. On the other hand, if it's a yes, what we'll do is work through what those next steps would be to make this process work for you. What I'd like to do is make sure that we're not in a situation where we're doing that wishy-washy maybe or think it over, because usually you're just being too polite to tell me no. And are you okay just telling me no if it's not a good fit for you, and I'll do the same?
That is awesome. When is the last time, listeners, you've had a salesperson start the sales call by inviting you to tell them no in a genuine way so that you don't waste your time being sold by somebody you don't want to buy from? It really is negative in the sense of counterintuitive and the opposite of anything someone would naturally think of. So you mentioned, Tracy, that we use this in the discovery process, and the phrase you used was taking it away. So explain what that means.
Well, and I want to refer to the buyer-seller dance a little bit here, Jim, because in the process that most salespeople have used, and in fact I taught for many, many years.
Right, me too.
You know, the system where we maybe build a little rapport and then jump right into our presentation doesn't allow for qualifications, and typically might include some slick sales techniques like, well, I'm, you know, if you don't buy it by Friday, it won't be available anymore.
Right.
Should I put that on the books for you on Monday or Thursday? Or, you know, the price goes up next week, so you better get on the books. That takeaway or that slick process was one that was so overused. I can't remember whether it's Ben Franklin Close or whatever the heck they used to call it.
Right.
But what I mean by taking it away is I really use it, and I wish this was more of a visual, right? But I actually use my hands and pull one towards me and one away to say, really what we're trying to do is give it a little push, you know, push it away a little bit and see if that pendulum keeps moving, if there's a reason for you to continue the conversation. And it typically is a nudge to go back to the upfront contract that says, hey, let's be honest with each other. If this isn't a fit, tell me. And I have found, especially over the last 2 weeks for some reason, that this has been the number one tool in our toolbox that has moved my sales process along.
Can you give us a specific example or tell us a story of where you have used this in the past couple of weeks and found it to be successful?
Yeah, I absolutely can. I can use an example of two calls, same customer this week. The first call was with the general manager, and the CEO had asked me to work with him to determine if and what is necessary, if we should work together and what would be necessary for us to put together a program that would work for this company.
Mm-hmm.
And so sat down with the general manager. The entire bonding rapport piece was really intriguing because I'm a very high I and have a lot of D in me also. This guy has a lot of I in him, but so much F that there would be moments of silence. I mean, I'm talking like almost a full minute of silence as he was thinking.
Mm.
And we went down through the whole process. Of course, I did a very deliberate upfront contract because immediately it became obvious we had different communication styles. So making him feel comfortable that he should just tell me no if it wasn't going to work. He leaned forward at the table, and for an S, that's a pretty big deal, right?
Right, right.
Turned his chair towards me. So already started to get some movement from a bonding rapport standpoint, but as we were going through the process, the pain got deeper, the questions got tougher, and he said, I've got to tell you, I don't know yet. I don't know. And I said, tell me what you don't know. He says, I don't even know what I don't know. And I thought to myself, well, that's a conundrum because either I haven't been clear,
right,
or I don't understand what he's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Two options. Mm-hmm. I'm a D. I decided to take the D option. I said, tell me what it is. Is it this or this or this? And frankly, you know what it was? It was, I thought we were going to go down a path where I needed to train a couple salespeople. Now, I think instead we might need to revisit whether or not the new design for sales is right based on your suggestion about assessing people and understanding if we've put the right people in the right positions. Because I've just done it this week. And I said, oh, well, okay, tell me, think out loud for me if you could, and let me ask a couple more questions that might help you to clarity. So we get through it, spend another, 20 minutes because it's a slow process. He's a slow talker, slow thinker. I have to wait. And in the end, he goes, you know what? I'm on the fence. And I said, straight out of my mouth, then that probably means it's a no. On the fence, probably not going to be something that works for you if after this hour and a half it's not making sense. And he turned to me and he said, I didn't say I don't know or think it over. He said, I said I was on the fence.
Mm.
Said, isn't that I'm thinking it over? He said, no, I'm on the fence about whether or not I need to have you come in and train everybody in the department. So had I not pushed it away, one of two things would have happened, right? I would have either not gotten it because he was on the fence and I wouldn't have been patient enough, or I would have been in a situation where I was training four people instead of putting together a strategic plan on leadership on down.
Phenomenal strategy that Tracy used. And one thing Tracy did that I think is so difficult is to allow for silence. Most salespeople like to fill that void of silence with their own words, but sitting there for a full minute while someone processes, that can be very challenging. Tracy, give your contact information in case there's somebody who'd like to reach out to you.
Oh, absolutely. Tracy Bullock is my last name. My contact information, my work phone is 602-524-3950. Again, 602-524-3950. And my Sandler email is tracy.bullock, like Sandra, at sandler.com.
I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download the three biggest mistakes salespeople should never make. For specific questions or comments, call us at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Sandler sales to me is like muscle memory for the brain. If you become an excellent free throw shooter, you don't stop practicing free throws. If you become a great golfer, you don't stop practicing your swing. It's the same thing with sales. And I come every week for about 5 years, and I leave almost every week with, dang it, I missed a step on this last sale, or that's a piece I need to improve on. So it becomes automatic, like those free throws and those golf swings.
Look at it as an investment in your team. Get past the time that you've got to put into it, and you're going to reap the benefits. And you may not see it at first, hang with it, and it will come. And you'll start seeing those skills come out in your employees, and they'll feel better about themselves. They'll feel better professionally. They'll feel like they're learning and growing. Just the education that it brought to the forefront of my management team helped their personal feelings about their work here.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
So far, I've been speaking with Sandler trainer Tracy Bullock, and we've been going into detail about the strategy called negative reverse selling. Tracy was sharing with us earlier about a sales call that she had and how this strategy allowed someone who was on the fence to decide they weren't really on the fence. They just didn't know if they should do choice A or choice B. So, Tracy, you were saying that you had a follow-up phone call with this same client. Tell us how that played out and how your strategy for negative reverse selling played out.
So it was fascinating, Jim, when I found out that it was between option A and B, that clearly the entire decision process needed to be revamped and relooked at. So the big question there is to go back and say, walk me through what you're thinking that we really need to rethink then between option A and B, because I would imagine that the processes and evaluation would be very different for both. And his answer was, this is still on call one, I need to get my director of sales in the room with us in order to help me vet and evaluate. Fair enough, what will that look like? Who are they? When are you thinking? How should we get together? And what part would you like to play versus me, right? So nice setup, nice host contract, I guess you'd say, and setup for the next call. The call, Dan, was face-to-face, it was yesterday, with the two of them. And they're always tricky when you come in like that,
right?
Because you need to find out pretty quickly what conversation is going on, what the one person has shared, and if there's any pre-existing opinions about that. And you can usually tell that in a tone or an attitude, their approach to the table, their body language, etc. Well, they clearly had already spoken about communication processes and performance enhancements work versus sales training. So already gave me a clue, Jim, that we were talking about more than training his sales team of four that they've broken up into two different focus areas on new skills, but instead performance metrics, et cetera, that they hadn't ever put there before. As we And they were very open. Of course, he did another upfront contract, gave them both permissions. Just like I told Jimmy, Matt, please feel free to tell me no. Jimmy, you told me you were on the fence, and this has been the result of what we were together. Tell me what your fence looks like today.
Great.
So again, pushing it away. You're still on the fence. You're not with me here. We're not sitting on the same side of the table trying to convince your director of sales. And Jimmy was his manager, although he didn't position it that way. So it was really intriguing. Thank goodness. I don't know whether I can say I was smart enough, but I was agile enough to understand that everybody in the room needed to be equal, Jimmy, Matt, and myself, because I didn't defer to one or the other and treated both of them like they needed to have an equal seat at the table. And it was interesting that Jimmy did not position himself as the general manager of the entire building, but that I would have to include Matt in the discussion. So ends up that Jimmy was Matt's boss.
Oh, really?
And as we talked, the second big hurdle wasn't, should we do training? It was, well, we have an e-commerce sales group and we have a customer service sales group and we need all this change. And in classic Sandler format, well, sounds like we need change. You both seem to have perplexed looks on your faces. Have I missed something? Is this still not right for you? Or are you not ready to make this commitment? So again, a negative reverse. Are you not? Using the not word. Push it away a little bit. And Jimmy said, today I would sign based on what you have helped us determine. But what I think the biggest roadblock is our CEO, our owner.
Yes.
And so we got to go through an entire conversation about that, which led us down path number three. And it's amazing to me, by not rushing a sales process and asking questions, how much shutting up has caught me in a sales situation.
Yeah.
And so the process that started with, I have an interest in helping build skills for my newly designed sales team, turned into a, we need all the people touching our customers, to really what we need to do plan, and we need your help holding our owner accountable for change. So we had decided what it looked like. My post-sell was another negative reverse, which is, I like that we've come to a conclusion about what you need and how you need it. Your body language tells me you're all in, but your hesitancy tells me that there's still some things you're concerned about. What is it? And they said he will sign on the dotted line and be excited today, and a week from now the owner might, you know, go student body left on it.
Right.
And the final negative reverse I used was, and I think it comes down to this, you guys probably need to have a discussion. If indeed this is something you want to do, are you still in agreement this is something you want to do? Yes. Then you probably need to have a conversation with the owner that sounds like this, you know, the whole breakup discussion. This is how we're going to have the conversation. Here's what it might look like. But if you're not ready and committed to have a conversation with the CEO, then we won't be able to do all of the things that you told me you want to accomplish before the end of 2017, which is, you know, starting a program,
right,
getting
right.
the design right, setting the objective. But if you aren't willing to do that, so unless you're willing to do that, I don't think that we should start or we should go any further.
And that was enough to help them realize, you know what, I guess I'm committed. Did they move forward then?
Yeah, so they moved forward. They're having the discussion with CEO.
Good.
We scripted it out. And we have a follow-up call, the three of us with the CEO on Wednesday. But it was intriguing. At each call, two things happened, right? What our agenda was going in ended up being the pains in the agenda coming out.
Yeah.
Secondly, there was much more information and much more pain than we ever thought and that they had ever admitted. And it was one of those things where I could have left them easily bleeding on the table, right? They always say, you know,
right.
find their pain, but
right.
for goodness sake, don't let them bleed out without giving them a solution to how to have a conversation with their CEO.
There's a couple of strategies that Tracy employed that are noteworthy. Number one, she positioned herself to be skeptical throughout the conversation. Most salespeople get so excited about here's a problem I can solve that they rush in to prematurely fix the problem. And that eagerness to fix the problem oftentimes is rejected by the buyer because it looks like neediness from the other side of the table. And recognizing that I need to position myself so that I'm skeptical about whether moving forward is a good idea for my sake, let alone for your sake, positions you in that place where you're able to just be a little, what's the word I want there, Tracy, a little bit less eager?
Well, really, truly, I think that's, I'd like to work with you, but I don't need to work with you.
Right.
I want to work with you. I'd like to work with you, but I don't need to work with you. The minute I adjusted that in my thinking, Jim, after about 6 months in the business,
right.
it made the difference of my approach because I was able to change my behavior based on that attitude.
The other strategy to bear in mind if you're in a sales role is no matter how quickly you want to sell a client, you can't force them to buy faster than they're willing to process. So you might think you can go in and do a one-call close, but if you're dealing with a behavior style or personality type like Tracy's dealing with someone she referred to as high S, they're very steady, they're very stable, they're very loyal, they don't like change, they're not fast-paced, and Tracy's that high I, which stands for influencer, very outgoing and gregarious and fast-paced. She moderated her approach to match the buyer's approach, which required her to slow down, to be far more cautious and careful, less wordy, less verbose, and let the buyer take the time they needed. And I'm guessing, Tracy, I know when I'm in the position that you were in, it's agonizing. I'm guessing you may have felt that way too.
Oh, it was the biggest thing I took away, I think, from initial training one, and that I train every single person who comes through my training center. I don't care whether they're a guest or auditing a class or in foundations or in mastery, is the whole concept of wait. Why am I talking? And I write it down at the top of my note before every call because that's my biggest struggle.
Wait, why am I talking? I love that. Tracy Bullock,
yeah.
Give your contact information in case there's somebody who'd like to reach out to you.
Absolutely. Tracy Bullock, Phoenix, Arizona, 602-524-3950. Again, 602-524-3950. It's tracy.bullock. No E in Tracy, Bullock like Sandra, at Sandler.com.
And I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you'd like this show and want to subscribe to the content, email us at crossroads@Sandler.com or reach out to us and ask how to subscribe at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
As a sales manager, you do what it takes to motivate your team, like having regular sales meetings and providing coaching and training when needed. But as a sales manager, how do you improve your performance? Sandler Sales Training has 6 free suggestions for you to become a more effective manager. Just visit crossroads.sandler.com for your free download. Attitude, behavior, and becoming a resource are just a few of the areas where you may improve your skills as a manager, a mentor, and a motivator. Sandler Sales Training invites you to grab these 6 free tips today at crossroads.sandler.com. You can use these suggestions to examine your attitudes and actions, which can help you interact better with your sales team and improve their performance. Become a better leader today. Again, that's crossroads.sandler.com. Sandler Sales Training. Finding power in reinforcement. Let them show you how. Visit crossroads.sandler.com today.
Welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. In this segment of our program, we get to hear the story behind some real heroes in our economy, and that is small business owners and managers. Terry Frisk is my guest today. He's a B2B CFO is his company, and what Terry does for businesses is he provides the oversight of a pair of eyes that are well experienced in understanding financials. Terry, I work with a lot of small and mid-sized business owners, and I think the biggest challenge most of them have is they really don't know what they're looking at when they look at their finances. So welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about how did you get in the business that you're in?
Well, I've been an accountant my entire career. I started out in public accounting and then leaped into private industry where I've served as a controller, a general manager, and CFO or chief financial officer for a number of mid-sized businesses in the Valley.
Yeah.
So in 2013, I was a CFO for a manufacturing company over in Nampa who had the opportunity to sell out to a large publicly traded company. And so I worked through that process with them. And at the end of the process, they asked me to stay on for a year to help in the transition of the business. So that really gave me the opportunity to think about, okay, what's the next chapter of my career?
Nice.
And so I looked around at different things, different opportunities, and I really wanted to take my background and expertise and help other small businesses to grow and thrive in this area. I really wanted to give back to the community. So I started to look around. I thought about hanging my shingle out and practicing independently, but I came across the firm B2B CFO, who is a national CFO services firm based in Phoenix, Arizona. And we have 230 partners located in 45 states. So the advantage of aligning myself with that group is I have 230 other people to bounce ideas off of, gain knowledge from, learn from their experiences so I can better serve my clients.
Yeah, you get a much bigger brain trust for self-development, too, when you have a peer group like that. Is yours a franchise?
No.
So what's the model?
No, I'm a full equity partner, you know, just like a law firm or a CPA firm. So we're full equity partners in the firm.
So you buy into the company when you signed up?
Yes.
Do you do some national training or national conventions and things like that to keep you all sharp?
Yes, we have an annual conference in Phoenix every year where we learn about, you know, what's going on in the nation in terms of what direction businesses are going in, where they need assistance, and how we can help them better.
So my premise that many business owners don't know what they're looking at when they look at their financials, do you buy that?
Yeah, quite often that's the case. You know, most business owners have some concept of the P&L or profit and loss statement.
Yeah.
You know, they understand revenues or the money's coming in, and they understand expenses are going out. But when it comes to the balance sheet or even measuring cash flow, they tend to be clueless. Their eyes gloss over, and, you know, what does all this mean? What is all this telling me?
Yeah. I remember years ago in my remodeling company, we were struggling, as we seem to do every year. And at the end of the year, we're filing our taxes. And according to the tax record, I owed $130,000.
Wow.
And I thought, how is it possible that I owe that much money and there's not that much money to have? And so that's when I realized how if you don't know finances, they're going to kill you.
Right.
Your thoughts.
Right. I agree that there's a big difference between what your profit and loss shows and what your cash flow shows. Cash is generated from profits in the business, but it's stuck in pockets along the way. It gets trapped in the balance sheet in terms of inventory and accounts receivable and some of those kinds of things. And a lot of business owners don't understand that. They say, you know, gee, I'm making a profit, but I don't have any cash. How come?
And as I like your phrase, it gets stuck in pockets on the way. It really does. And if you don't know what to look for, you'll never find it or stop the bleeding.
Right.
So what would you say, Terry, area are some of the top issues that you find small to medium-sized businesses struggle with?
Cash. You know, having sufficient cash to operate the business is really the number one issue that small businesses have. You know, and then managing that cash, figuring out, developing a budget to determine how they're going to spend their cash, and not only budgeting in terms of their revenue and expenses, but also in terms of the balance sheet, how they're going to invest in equipment and inventory and those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's easy to say. It's kind of harder to do. So what are some of the fixes that you and your firm can help a company install that would help them better manage cash?
It's frequent monitoring. At a minimum, you need to be reviewing your financial statements on a monthly basis to really track what's going on and track the trends. But that's not really enough on a number of items. So I recommend a weekly flash report, what I call it, that monitors the more key items in the business, one being the cash. How much cash came in? How much cash went out last week? What your revenues were last week? And how that's trending? Is it trending upward? Is it trending downward? Because you need to react in both situations. If it's trending upward, you may need, you know, additional inventory. You may need additional staffing to prepare for the trend in growth. If it's going down, well, you know, just the opposite. You need to take a look at your staffing in terms of maybe reducing hours and reducing inventories and planning.
Increasing sales.
Right.
Right. We got to do something about the top line if we're going to manage, have a bottom line to manage.
Exactly.
So a company that you might come alongside with and help, describe what that company is. Is it small, medium, large?
I target businesses with annual revenues between $5 million and $50 million. You know, businesses that size are have the type of issues that really they need a CFO to help them develop strategies to grow and measure performance of their business.
But they can't really afford it.
Right.
At that level, I can't afford somebody full-time as a CFO.
Right.
But I still have the function necessary in the organization.
So I scale my services to fit the size and needs of each individual business. You know, some businesses I work with on a weekly basis. Some businesses on there are just once a month to help them go through their financial statements and help them interpret the data.
And I think one of the things that we neglect is that everything you mentioned is manageable.
Right.
It can be controlled. And if you're not currently managing it, it's because you're either ignorant, I didn't know I should, or maybe I just don't know how to. So Terry, your firm has some unique tools and processes that you help companies with. Give me an example of what you might do to help.
Well, what we're going to do is I come in initially and do a discovery analysis where I learn about the business and what the needs are and how I can be able to best come in and help. You know, one thing that's going to be important is having good, clean accounting records and making sure they're accurate and up to date and you're getting timely information. And then putting together a monthly report of what went on in the business for that month. So if a buyer's coming in looking at that and they say, well, why is this number so high this month? You have a record. Well, you know, it's because of this.
You can paint the picture.
Right.
So you've got an upcoming event. Tell us about.
Yes. I'm going to do a exit strategy preparation of conference on September 28th, where I'm going to bring in the author, Bo Burlingham, who wrote the book Finish Big that discusses several successful and not so successful exits by business owners. So he's going to keynote, and then I've got a number of other speakers coming in to talk about the legal aspects, the tax aspects, valuation,
awesome.
and wealth planning. Yeah. Right. I mean, we've been on such a roll since the recession of 08, 09. It's kind of hard to see next recession maybe coming or maybe looming, but it's important to be preparing now when that recession sets in that you can batten down the hatches of your business and survive it.
And you own a crystal ball that says when it's going to start?
No, I wish I did. I wish I did. But, you know, one thing I do know for sure is we will have more recessions.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And if you're not prepared for it, it will cost you a lot of time, money, and heartache.
Right. And, you know, another thing about recessions is they provide opportunities for businesses. Quite often, customers are more apt to shop their business around. And when they're busy, they're too busy today to be looking at alternatives. But when things slow down, it's a good time to be looking around. And if you're able to step up and provide that business, I mean, that's the best time to be marketing your business is during a recession.
Especially to your existing client base.
Right.
You got to make sure you've got them locked down because 100% of your current clients are on your competitors' prospecting list.
Exactly.
So any suggestions on preparing for the next recession?
Well, first off, you need to make sure you have a war chest of funds available in order to carry you through financially through the recession. So, you know, having some money set aside. And I recommend today, as you're prospering, set aside a set amount each week, maybe 5% of your cash receipts, put it aside into a savings account and start building that regularly. So you do have a war chest when the time time comes. Make sure you have financing available on the other side to be able to supplement any funds that you have to carry you through the recession.
I think you also need to have a plan. When I start seeing it happen, what actions will I take?
Right.
When the big recession happened in 08, I had a CFO, full-time employee, running three of my companies, and Doug Croft, he's a man of integrity. He walked in my office and he said, "I'm here to tender my resignation. You can't afford me." And I thought that was awesome, because I would never have known, right?
Yeah.
I would never have known because I wasn't looking at it. I'm in sales. I'm the optimist.
Right.
So having somebody to have a plan, and then he said, "Here's what we need to do," and really helped. So I think having someone in that position who's really looking out for your best interest is something that you should be working on now, because that recession is going to come. We've talked about exit strategy, planning for the next recession. Let's shift gears and look at leading indicators. We use the acronym KPI, Key Performance Indicator. From a financial perspective, what should businesses be looking at?
You want to be looking at not only financial data, but non-financial data that will paint a picture of the trend your business is going in. So by financial data, that's going to be things like your profit and loss statement, your balance sheet. Looking at the performance indicators in P&L is going to be like your gross profit, net income. But you also want to be looking at forward-looking information like prospects. You know, how are your sales prospects? What are your closing rates? Those kinds of things that are going to indicate how well your business is going to be performing in the future based on your efforts today.
Yeah, so how do I know what I should be looking at? If I'm a business owner that says, you know, that sounds good, but I don't know where to start.
Well, you need to select about a half a dozen real key indicators in your business that you watch regularly. We refer to it as a dashboard. It's like the dashboard in your car that tell you the performance of your business at a glance that you can look at on a frequent basis. I recommend at least weekly to get a flash report that shows not only what happened last week, but what's on the horizon.
I know in sales, we talk about KPIs, and we look at the number of attempts.
Right.
How many times am I trying to get in front of a new client? How many conversations with decision makers? How many presentation appointments do I do? And how many closed sales or closed files? That's a simple way of looking at what's coming that would tell me if I'm going to have pipeline. When it comes to other aspects of a company, what should they look at?
Well, it varies from company to company. Manufacturing business, that's going to be a little more labor intensive. You're going to be looking at a ratio of labor dollars to sales and how that's trending. In an auto dealership, one real common KPI they call the absorption rate, where you measure the gross profit from parts and service and compare that to the operating costs, the overhead costs of the business. The key there is auto dealerships want to be able to cover their operating costs with their parts and service. So if they don't sell a car tomorrow, they're still in business.
That's awesome. And it's a great example of finding that unique KPI to your company that would help you determine if you're on target.
Right, because the owner of an auto dealership can look at that number and say, okay, I'm good, or, you know, we need to take a deeper dive into the numbers.
We got to get something going here. And how long is your typical engagement with a client?
It's in perpetuity.
Yeah, so once somebody starts working with you, you become a member of the team.
Right.
Yeah, can imagine that. So if we happen to have a manager or business owner online, what kind of advice would you give them as to the top two or three things that they really ought to be careful of in today's economy?
Well, one, having a cash reserve, a cushion, if you will, to in the event they have a sudden need that comes up. And a cushion may take the form of not only cash in a bank, but having a sufficient line of credit available in order to help them through that slump.
Yeah, or growth, because growth takes money too.
Right. Secondarily, take care of your workforce. Take care of your team, because current low unemployment levels, it's hard to find new people. So the best thing to do is to keep people on.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I just interviewed one guest for the show, and he said at one point when he quit his firm working for one of the top 500 corporations, the day he quit, his vice president or his manager showed up with a $50,000 check and said, "Will you please stay?" He said, "Why didn't you have this yesterday?" Right?
Right.
They didn't take care of him, and because they didn't take care of him, he lost. And by the time you lose him, it's too late. I think that is great advice. What other suggestions would you have?
Another suggestion is to make sure you establish a budget for your business. And I know budget in a lot of people's context is an ugly word.
Yeah.
And better word would be a plan, a financial plan for your business in terms of best case and worst case scenarios for the upcoming planning horizon, typically 1 year. But you also want to be thoughtful of looking forward even longer, you know, longer term in terms of planning your growth.
So if you have a company that's been kind of at a plateau for a while and they're looking to do something to shake it up, what suggestions do you give that company?
One, they need to step back and really evaluate why it is they're at this certain plateau level. Is it bottleneck relating to sales and marketing effort, or is it in terms of their productive capacity? What it is that is causing their sales to level off. And then from there, plan accordingly.
I think you got to have a plan to grow.
Right, exactly.
If you don't have a plan to grow, what do? You're just throwing darts at a wall.
Right. Too many businesses, you know, get caught up in the status quo of the day.
Yeah.
And are not really that forward looking in terms of planning and developing a growth for their business.
Yeah, I'm so busy working in my business, I'm not working on my business.
Exactly.
Terry, give your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you.
My website is terryfriskcfo.com, or you can email me at terryfrisk, T-E-R-R-Y-F-R-I-S-K, at b2bcfo.com.
Terry Frisk, glad to have you with us, Terry. On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the stories of local and regional business leaders who are able to negotiate and navigate change in the industry. If you would like to be on the program, please reach out to me at 208-429-9275, or you can send us an email to crossroads@sandler.com. That's crossroads@sandler.com. If you don't feel like you're qualified and would like some help getting there, give us a call and we'll find out if your needs are in alignment with some of the things we help our clients with. An initial visit and we'll find out if there's anything we can do to help. I'm Jim Stevens. We're going to be back with Behind the Business just after this.
Andrew Smith, a salesperson, is getting ready to walk into the biggest meeting of his life. His sales are way down this year, and so is his confidence. His heart thumps. He can't catch his breath. He should have called Sandler Training first. Sales is a tough business, but Sandler Training uses continual reinforcement with ongoing training and individual coaching. You won't fail because we won't let you. Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
Hi, I'm Jim Stevens of Sandler Training in Boise. Business owners, do you find yourself struggling to get the results that you know you and your team deserve? Let's be candid. If you knew what to do, you'd be doing it. It may be time for you to get humble and ask for help. Truly great leaders rely on the support of a mentor to hone their skills. Ready to take the leap of faith and tap into your greatness? Call me today at 429-9275. That's 429-9275.
Tracy, so far we've talked about conceptual, but I'd like us to get into the technical. I don't suppose you'd be able to walk me through some of your technical execution of this approach, would you?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Negative reverse selling is the art of being skeptical as opposed to overeager. We call the disease salespeople get happy ears. When I hear something somebody says to me, it's exactly what I want to hear. I get all Twitter-pated and I get overeager, and then I start to assume things that I really shouldn't assume. Negative reverse selling helps me moderate my enthusiasm, be skeptical, and avoid getting emotionally hooked because, frankly, I really want the buyer to sell me on their commitment to use my services rather than me sell them on why they should use it. So in this segment, Tracy and I are going to share with you some objections. I'll give you some objections, and she'll help us script it in a way that would be counterintuitive to a traditional approach. Like, for example, not uncommon in a sales call for someone to say, you know, Tracy, I don't think we'll be moving forward.
And I then would say one of two things. Either I would say, well, what can I do to make this no a yes? That would be a very traditional way for me to handle it. But instead, I might say something like, you know what, from a negative reverse standpoint, would say, you know, I didn't think you were going to. Where did I lose you? What part of this process doesn't seem right for you?
And there's two components in the negative reverse. So in Sandler glossary of terms, negative means the opposite of, and reverse means asking a question. So there's an opposite expected statement followed up by a question. So you may have a prospect say to you, I'm going to need some referrals. Can I give your customers a call? And traditionally, a salesperson is going to say, well, sure, I've got a lot of clients I could set you up with, and then go through the rigmarole of facilitating an introduction, only to find out the buyer never really takes action. So, Tracy, what would a strip line of, can I give your customers a call so I have a referral sound like?
You know, I always appreciate the fact that people want to check out both my professionalism as well as the content and the progress they've made. In order for me to provide you with a good piece of information, let me ask you a couple things. What specific kind of information are you looking for so I can point you in the right direction? And secondly, of the things we've talked about, which would be the one that you would most like to bet in order to make your final decision? Because I get the feeling that we're not quite ready to move ahead yet. Is that the case?
Great response. One thing you might also want to do, we like you to mirror the intensity and the communication style of your buyer. So you might say something like, I'd be happy to provide you with a referral when it's appropriate. Right now, I'm just not sure this is a good time because I don't hear that you've made a commitment.
Ooh, I like that.
And then say, I've made a commitment to my clients. I will not waste their time with a referral request from someone who has not made a commitment yet to buy from us. So as soon as you get ready to buy, we can have that conversation. In fact, I will introduce you personally.
Ooh, I love that. I love that.
So next,
I wrote that down.
Oh, good. Next strategy is, and by the way, listeners, we have this thing we call watch the clock. So if you can imagine in your mind's eye a clock, 3 o'clock is somebody who said, I'm sold, I want to buy it. 6 o'clock is somebody who's neutral. And then 9 o'clock is somebody who says, no, I'm done, we're not working together. So there's gradients between I'm sold, I'm enthusiastic, I'm interested, I'm neutral, I'm disinterested, I'm hostile. We're listening as trained Sandler professionals for where the position of the buyer is on that pendulum. And so here is a position that you might hear from someone who's all the way sold. They may say to Tracy, Tracy, this looks great.
When you say it looks great, I'm so excited that we have been able to bring something that interests you. But when you say it looks great, what specific piece were you thinking? Because I'm kind of surprised that you're this enthusiastic.
Yeah, a traditional salesperson is going to go in for the kill. All right, looks great. Then let's get you signed up. Next one
is
here's somebody who's maybe in the neutral zone. They say something like, well, Tracy, interesting what you proposed, but it's unlikely that we're going to make a change.
Out of curiosity, we're sitting here for a reason. So I'm wondering why you invited me in. What piece of our initial conversation intrigues you, why you invited me in, and whether or not it makes sense for us to even continue a conversation if you're really not likely to make a change.
Great, love that. If you wanted to go a little bit harder strip line, you could say, I'm not surprised to hear that. Change is messy, and I didn't get the sense that you had the heart for that kind of action right now.
Well, I love change is messy.
When do you suppose you might be ready to face the hard work of changing? So the initial statement is almost a challenge. So those people who are in that neutral zone, you got to hit them hard to get them swinging. So that challenge is, I didn't think you'd be up to it. And then the reverse is, at what point will it get difficult enough that you know you have no choice and you've got to change?
You know, you said something there, Jim, I want to point out that I really like, and that is you softened it with change is messy.
Right.
And when do you suppose you'd be, the first one was with a hard hit, like, you know, I didn't think you were ready to quite jump into the fray there, the mud pit. But the second time you did it, or your company, you came back around to it, then when do you suppose you'd be ready to, you know, roll up your sleeves, if you will? What a nice, I mean, even if it's the same person, the same conversation, you came around it a second time so that you could use two different disciplines.
Great point. Oftentimes you're going to hear a buyer say something and during the sales call like, well, I'm interested, but can we get a discount?
I've heard all kinds of Sandler trainers manage that, and my initial response to that is, I don't know. What do you mean by discount?
Good. That's a great reverse. Instead of assuming that you can, find out what are they looking for. How would you make that a little bit of a negative reverse?
Well, frankly, when somebody says that a discount, I don't know that we even know if it's worth you paying a penny for, let alone $100,000 worth. If you don't mind, let's decide whether or not it makes sense for us to work together before we worry about whether or not what you're paying and whether or not it's the ROI. I don't know that we have a match yet. Would it be all right if we continue the process a little bit further and then one or the other of us can call the ball?
Yeah, good. Like it. And then if you wanted to make it a little bit harder, especially if you're selling what Tracy and I sell, they say, well, can you give me a discount? My response is, you know, absolutely not. Why would you want to hire a Sandler trainer who sells based on discounts? Is it over or should we keep talking?
And I've heard people say, you betcha, if you want, what, a 20% discount, what 20% of what we've talked about would you like not to prevent?
Like that. So that's a great nurturing response. You bet I can. What would you like to not accomplish so that it's quid pro quo, you're getting something for your efforts. Tracy, this has been a lot of fun. Give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Tracy Bullock. My phone number is 602-524-3950. Again, 524-3950, 602 area code. My email address is tracy.bullock, like Sandra Bullock, at sandler.com.
And this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. My calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. Are you tired of forgiving your employees for not trying? Are you bored with the daily ritual of at least and just enough that you allow to haunt you all weekend long? Are you ready to test yourself and see if you could do it? Are you ready to test your team? Call us at 208-429-9275. Ask to set up a discovery meeting, and we'll set up a conversation. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Insanity is doing the same thing the same way, expecting different results. Change is difficult and messy. As a result, most people push themselves to work harder because they don't realize there's an alternative. Sheer willpower and determination can only go so far in making a significant impact. Charisma or optimism alone is not enough to capture your ideal client at a price point that allows you to grow your business. Loyalty to employees and clients sustains a devoted following, but will not attract the talent or clients needed to help more people benefit from your services. Accurate systems and processes are vital. However, this alone is not going to achieve your desired results. Most business owners don't have the courage necessary to challenge their comfort zone. If you are the exception and are ready to roll up your sleeves, get messy and change, call me at Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or connect on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Tracy Bullock. Now, Tracy, Sandler is a trial of ongoing reinforcement and commitment. I'd like you to walk us through some of the frustrations, concerns, or challenges that have developed in your life and how you have used Sandler to get you through these challenges.
You know, one of the number one reasons that I decided Sandler was the curriculum I wanted to represent professionally was the concept of behavior, attitude, and technique. And while I understood the connection between having, you know, great skills, and I loved the Sandler process that looks so different than every other salesperson, the connection between behavior and attitude was fascinating to me. Mm. So much so that on my wall in big 4-foot by 6-foot letters in my training center, it says, it's not how you feel that determines how you act. It's how you act that determines how you feel. When you start adding in the concept of law of attraction and the power of intention and the fact that if you do the right behaviors, the results will follow.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it started exponentially. When I say it was my mindset, my behavior, my head trash, my business results all started turning around. And I mean, I can pinpoint multiple different places in my 4-year career with Sandler where it hit me. But frankly, my business as a single business owner, a single person working still on my own without, you know, obviously I get help with some marketing and some bookkeeping, but all the rest of it
right. Is
me.
Right.
You know, the processing, the selling, the filling, all that nonsense. And it's so easy to become isolated. It's so easy to worry or to be in a vacuum and to have lists everywhere, to forget to look at not only the why am I doing
right.
it, why do I enjoy it. I have a ton of fun when I sell and a ton of fun. More than a ton of fun when I train. But when I don't really come back to what you put out in the universe is what you get back. A lot of attraction. It is amazing how I get lost. and I had a wonderful, every week I would go in and do in-house training for about 20 to 25 garage door guys in their shop, right? 6:45 to 8:30 in the morning, right? Bring them bagels, everybody's happy. Here are a bunch of guys, you know, tatted up, gauges in their ear, grease under their fingernails, standing up doing role plays with me on bonding and rapport and post-sell, because those are the two places in when you have technicians that they make or lose money and reviews. And the intriguing thing was they put me on hiatus because they were doing two things. They lost half their sales force because they were producing, but some of them were on drugs, some of them weren't following company policy, one of them actually told a customer off. And secondly, they bought a third franchise, and needed to spend some time restructuring and using the management team from Arizona to go to Baltimore, outside of Baltimore, in Maryland, in order to design it and bring it up to speed to the quality that they have it. So when I say it was lucrative, it was very lucrative. And, you know, it was one of those pieces that pushes you from I'm doing well to I'm doing
really well.
Great. Yeah, right. Really well. Right. Not Rochelle well, but you know, really well for the time and business, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately when it put me on hiatus, I had half year. We're gonna call you back, probably be about 4 weeks. Here's what we're gonna do, blah blah blah. Okay.
Right. Right.
Made sense to me. I was willing to buy the way that they wanted me to, not the way that I should have been, you know, skeptically curious, et cetera, et cetera. So 4 weeks go by. So, hey, it's Tuesday morning, it's Monday. So should I show up tomorrow with bagels? Oh, no. You know, then we've had da, da, da. So, Jim, it's been, well, that was March, and they still haven't returned. But it took me until May to recognize, March, April, took me to the first part of May to recognize that even though they'd reach out to me, they put me off, it was actually a put-off. They may or they may not come back.
Yeah,
but I had the fear of two things. First of all, head in the sand, of course they're going to come back. We've had a great time, all the metrics, and I did all the right things in post-sell about once a month. You know, here's where we are, here's where we wanted to be, look at the results. Every week we review results on the sales and a buy person, what I'm going to call it, metric. But I wasn't understanding what the true objection or the true reason was, and they were just in total disarray. Had I managed it the same way I just managed the call we were talking about negative overselling, I would have changed my entire thought process. So all of a sudden I find myself, that was one fear. The second fear was, what if they do come back and I've filled their position? I have so many opportunities because now they own 5 franchises across the country. Don't want to lose that opportunity. Secondly, don't want to tell them no, because I'd rather have 2 customers in that time frame, you know, maybe 2 different days. But it wasn't until I actually sat down and said, Law of Attraction says if they're going to come back, they're going to come back. So you put it out there. Why wouldn't they want to work with me? There's absolutely no reason. You didn't say wouldn't, right? Because that's a negative thing.
Right.
They want to work with me. They want to have me continue to help them in their life. They value what I bring, and I value them as a customer. That belief let me finally say, if they did, somebody else will too. But my pipeline wasn't rich enough to support that customer leaving. And so a couple big lessons there. Law of Attraction says, or behavior says, better go out and prospect. Better do it wisely.
Right, right.
And fear had me by the throat in May because I'm like, oh my gosh. Not because my business isn't good, but because it's like, how could I be so dumb as to let this happen? I train people every day to not do this. And so then it was when I got home from our conference that I said, what do people who are really, really successful in this business consistently do? What is it that they do and what do I do? What are the pieces that I'm not doing that I need to do? And what am I going to do about it? And it's what I'm going to do about it that made all the difference. So it's one thing to understand what behaviors drive results and to do those behaviors and let go. It's another to have the intention that says it's not a matter of not wanting to be where I am. It's a matter of wanting to be somewhere else and asking the universe for it, which sounds kind of hokey pokey to me when I first heard it.
And woo-woo,
but I've got to tell you, when you start recognizing the possibility versus the limitation, and you start believing in yourself in a different way, it has made in just, well, let's see, how long have we been back from conference? 2 weeks?
Three weeks,
when one of them was a holiday week. In that time, I have now landed 12 people for Foundation.
Wow, that is awesome.
I was just going to say that had I worried about head trash, had I worried about whether or not I had the time versus whether or not I was committed to my success, then I don't think I would have been able to enjoy the results I have coming up next week.
That is awesome. I heard one of our colleagues share with me this story that really explains that law of attraction. She said, there's a buzzard and a hummingbird both flying over a field. The buzzard looks for dead things to eat, and the hummingbird looks for flowers and sweet nectar. And the law of attraction is basically putting out to the universe, I'm looking for sweet nectar, not for dead things. So one last time, Tracy, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Absolutely. Tracy Bullock, 602-524-3950. I'm in Arizona. My email address is Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, Bullock@Sandler.com.
Thank you so much, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to wake up people from the slumber of mediocrity. If they're trapped in a comfort zone and frustrated because they're living with just good enough, ready to accept chaos and volatility in their daily business and customer relationships, prone to learn the hard way through trial and error, hoping eventually you'll figure it out. If you're ready to give up the insanity of repetition, call me at 208-429-9275. Have a great week. And remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it. Have you noticed that you can smell a salesperson a mile away? It's the smell of neediness and desperation. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Listen to my client, Bethany Bredegar with Sonatrol Pacific, share her experience learning how to stop selling and become a trusted advisor.
Everything you teach is centered around not doing what the customer expects, that dance that you do back and forth that I was stuck doing, didn't like my job, and changed the way that I interact clients so much so that now I feel very proud of what I do, and I talk to people and they forget I'm a salesperson because of these techniques. They end up selling it themselves. I'm not even selling.
Stop the buyer-seller dance and learn to love your career again. Call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com.
Sandler Training can show you how and why salespeople fail. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.